Welcome to the Gamers Haven Podcast, a gaming podcast for game masters of all gaming systems. So grab your dice bags and we'll get your game on.
Hello everyone out there in internet land. Welcome back to the Gamers Haven Podcast. I'm Ethan.
I'm Nathan.
This is Jeremy. I've put together and repaired so many computers this week, I don't really know what reality looks like anymore.
Look out the window. Isn't it nice?
That looks like everything else I've been working on lately, so...
Yeah, this looks like a big circuit board to you, doesn't it?
I won't go into details, but I had the most surreal interview as of late. It was weird. It was a bad episode of a bad sitcom.
Wow, that bad?
Yeah.
Oof. I don't even watch sitcoms and I can figure out how bad that is.
I've been prepping for my Sunday game.
We actually played your Sunday game.
Yeah, we did. We did play that. Yes. It went well.
Jeremy started a D&D game in his homebrew world, Thabra. It's a long-running campaign world he's had for, you know, years and centuries and everything. Since the dawn of time, you know, the usual stuff.
Since the dawn of time.
Which Nathan's been running his game.
We're one step closer to wrapping up this second book. Players are finally on their way to go deal with the giant monster to the south. Unfortunately, I don't think they're going to deal with it the way that they think they are. But that's not the actual plot twist for the story.
I want to hit it in the face with a pie.
Is that its legendary name, giant monster to the south?
No, it's actually, it's not a legendary creature. Well... Yeah, it's working on gaining that status.
After it eats that adventuring party, it will gain legendary status.
I don't know if it'll eat them per se, but it might gnaw on them a bit.
Yay! I'm looking forward to playing that now.
It's probably a highly intelligent Tyrannosaurus Rex who's going to law school.
Yes.
And he'll sue you because you're trying to encroach in his territory.
And he's taking odd jobs under the name Mr. Pilkington.
Yes, with a wand of hostile takeover.
Yes. And that's what you guys have been running. I've been running absolutely nothing because, I've been working a lot and I have school, so my running days are kind of on hiatus right now. But I have been played in both of those games and also did get in a game of 7C with one of my other groups. And that was a lot of fun.
Just a quick question about that game. Is there any magic in that? Or is it all...
There's magic.
There is.
Is there really? Mm-hmm. I've never played it. I really want to try it.
The way the GM handles it is he puts the magic as sort of like Deadlands handles magic. It's there. It's in the background. Most people don't know about it.
And if you cast a spell in front of people, they're
people are
going to
freak out and lynch you. Yeah, pretty much.
There's another good game which I don't want to get into details, but there's Furry Pirates. Usually, I stay away from any game that's furry anything.
Right.
But Furry Pirates is actually pretty fun, as well as pretty tame and very funny. And they also, it's basically humanoid foxes and other furry things that are on pirate ships with guns and cannons and magic. It was a lot of fun.
Is that the one we played with
Bob Smith?
Well, yeah, after we delete his name, yes.
Oh, yeah, you mean
him?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and it was a lot of fun. Maybe we'll do a...
The guy with the thing and the stuff.
And the stuff.
And that one thing.
The one place?
Actually, I think we're hiring him to paint the walls in our facility here.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do need some paint. It is... I don't know, this gunmetal gray sort of gets you kind of depressed.
I'm more worried about a kitchen. There's a reddish tint on the walls that I don't think is paint.
Don't worry about that. After I turned off the Geiger counter, you know, that clicking stopped too. So we should be able to get the sound quality better too.
Yeah,
great.
That Furry Pirates reminds me of another game that I read into, but I never actually had a chance to play. It's called Albedo. Albedo. It's based on an independent comic. I can't remember the name of the gentleman who wrote it, but it's an alternate universe instead of people or furries, and it's a science fiction game, which actually ties into what we're going to talk about today, which is genres.
Yes. This is our kickoff for a series of podcasts we plan on doing. Today we're going to do sort of a broad discussion on genres, some several genres that we're going to eventually talk about. And then subsequent podcasts, we're going to focus on each genre in more of a specific fashion, much more detail. Today's podcast, we are talking about
general overview of of genres and the role-playing field.
Role-playing field and our advice on running certain genres, and might talk a little bit about subgenres and whatnot. But we're going to take a break real quick, and when we come back, we're going to dive right on into our discussion.
Apparently, the natural laws of our universe don't operate here, Captain.
Hello, friends. Tim and John here. Do you harken back to the gaming days of yesteryear? Back when controls only had two buttons, and there's only two dimensions for you to worry about?
Ah, yes. Those were magical times.
Well, come relive those halcyon days of yore at 8-Bit and Beyond.
That's www.fistfulofcomics.com/8-bit.
Good night.
And good gaming.
Warning! 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 Alien approaching!
Okay, well, we're back. And as we said in the intro, we are here to talk about genres today. And we're going to try to talk, I believe, about probably about half a dozen or so genres that we've delineated. First, we're going to talk about fantasy, which is preeminently the biggest genre that's out there. Is fantasy, what with Dungeons and Dragons being the front runner in that field, but also various other things.
Earth Dawn,
definitely being one. Any other kind of generic fantasy setting like that can also be used for fantasy.
Palladium Fantasy role-playing system.
Ugh.
Yeah, GURPS. But we still ought to mention GURPS, generic universal GURPS, role-playing system.
Fantasy Hero is also there.
Middle-earth
role-playing game. The actual Lord of the Rings role-playing game, which I've heard nothing good about. But we'll mention it anyway.
There's also the Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game.
How could I have forgotten that? Warhammer Fantasy,
because
yes.
Your mind's not thinking gory today.
Not to mention the book is, like, the size of a city phone book.
Yeah, but it's cool.
It's got everything you need in it.
There's only so many tables you really, truly need. But it is neat to have.
It's true. At least it's not Gate War. The fantasy genre.
Nice thing about fantasy is really... Once you have it set up the way you want it set up, pretty much anything goes. Because, technically, fantasy is anything from the imagination.
I find it interesting how people approach certain genres. Fantasy is one people have a much better idea of approaching. They're much more open to approaching it. They feel like it's much more mutable, much more adaptable to whatever they need it to be. Whereas any other genre... I feel constrained by like doing a horror setting or doing a modern setting. Fantasy gives me the latitude to sort of go out there into the middle of whatever. Even with science fiction, you're still constrained under certain scientific principles that you have to explain. Under fantasy, you have that caveat of magic typically. Mm-hmm. Now. That also depends if you're going for historical fantasy, because there are, people do fantasy settings without magic or low magic settings as opposed to a high magic setting.
Mm-hmm. Also depends on how much realism in your fantasy do you want. Because that can have problems with the players believing that, like terrain. Take terrain as an example. It's a lot easier for somebody to believe or at least understand the mountains the size of up to Everest. I mean, that's
right.
Big, that's large, but at least we can comprehend it.
Right.
Or
then when
oceans
you have...
of, but oceans of water as big as right. What's on Earth. But when you have mountains that are the size of...
Like if in, for example, I've been reading Tallis, mm-hmm. and Tallis is the city by the spire of Imani Cook. The big landmark in that is a spire that is just eerily large. It like disappears into the clouds. It's so tall. I don't know if the book actually gives an actual number of how big it is, but it's taller than anything found on Earth as far as I understand. And it's things like that can exist in a fantasy setting, But even looking at it from a realistic standpoint, on, like, I know for certain on, you know, on Earth, you know, we have the Grand Canyon, we have the Himalayas, you know, those are the big landmarks of Earth. But you go off to Mars and whatnot, you have, they have a canyon there that's like 50 times bigger than the Grand Canyon. It's huge.
It's also 4 times deeper, and also their highest mountain point is 15 miles.
There are some things that are really hard for us to wrap our mind around, which is part of the beauty of fantasy, because it takes your mind and just expands it. I really wish I knew more about certain painters. I can remember some of the paintings that are fantasy related, which I just love. But it's so neat because it depends on how even surreal you want to get.
Right.
Do you want to be realistic, or do you want to be just totally out there? Do you want the players to walk from point A to point B? And yeah, you know, it's basically like Earth. There's grass, there's trees, with an occasional orc running in there. Or do you want all the players to float across this land of giant mushrooms and floating talking stone heads
and jump on turtles and eat flowers and shoot fire?
It really depends on how. I mean, are we going with like Alice in Wonderland? I mean, that's a lot of fantasy. Yeah. Or are we going with Tolkien? I mean, that's on the other side. It's fantastic, and there are very mind-boggling things, but there's also very normal things.
Right.
We could live in the world of Tolkien
Even looking at Tolkien he actually set up a history of that, and he based most of that on European history, didn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Middle Earth is actually just an older Earth.
And even on that line, Warhammer Fantasy, doesn't Warhammer Fantasy use the map of Earth?
They somewhat do. It's been a while.
It looks like it, though.
Yeah. And also, that's another thing. Their world is a world that, while yes, it'd be strange for us to get used to all the races and the undead, things like that, we could survive and be fine and not be just mind-boggled.
Definitely one thing you'd want to ask yourself when you're making a fantasy setting is, how fantastical do you want to make it? Do you want to have it where people are afraid of magic, or do you want it to be along the lines of, oh, hey, an ogre is chasing his halfling or this kobold down the street. Are people going to run in fear of the ogre, or is that an everyday experience?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, that happens.
And then you have to break it down, and this gets into another conversation. You can break it down by societies, locations, things like that. But, yeah, that's true. And what's really nice is with fantasy, well, and this works with all genres, but how you can have something that's basically normal with a little bit of oddity, and then suddenly put the players into something that is just completely different, such as, well, we're traveling along the Great Plains, everything is fine, we get into a fight with these odd creatures we don't know very well, and suddenly we're standing in this place of black sand with living beings of fire walking around, and it looks like...
Fantasy definitely gives you the ability to do things like that, that you don't have to necessarily explain, or, well, why is, you know, where you have some players who are, well, why is it like this? Well, it just is.
It is.
And this is a world, it's like, why do you question this when there is a world where Joe over there can lob fireballs out of his nose, you know?
Or shoot lightning from his fingertips.
Where giants and gods can walk upon the world, and
then you come upon a land of black sand and red skies. And
well, and yeah, you can explain everything away by magic.
Well, on the other flip side, I mean, is there anything else you want to add about fantasy before we move on?
Maybe later.
Well, we'll get more into depth on
more in depth on the fantasy and the fantasy podcast, I'd say. Yeah. But moving on, we have the next genre we have is science fiction.
I would say science fiction is probably the second most popular one, mm-hmm. stemming from the fact that there's games like Star Wars and Star
right.
Trek, and soon to be the Battlestar Galactica, Serenity.
I mean, those are setting specific, but you also have D20 Future, things like that.
Which I haven't had a chance to see yet.
There used to be Alternity, which basically they folded into D20 Future, most of it.
Alternity was pretty good.
There's any number of science fiction settings out there. How would you we'll start with Nathan. How would you define science fiction? Because this is an interesting question.
Well, science fiction might be fantastical in a way, but the problem with science fiction is that there's at least a bit of it is grounded in provable facts that we have now. Science fiction usually is just, as it appears, is an extension of what we are now with, you know, into the future. Star Wars, and then Star Wars takes a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. But if you look at it,
right,
it's, you know, all the technology is essentially something that with specific and, well, specific and intense scientific research is something that will probably be feasible at some point in time in the future. I mean, we've got lasers mounted on swivel mounts that shoot down missiles right now in the military. I mean,
right,
we're at the size of the point where we're getting them down to the size of a rifle.
Actually, we got one in the hangar. I just thought I'd point that out.
Oh, did we find that finally?
Yeah, it's broken. I've been using it though.
But well, Jeremy, would you define science fiction?
I'm not going to give Nathan's definition was fine, I'm not going to really add to the definition, except I am going to state that it depends on what level of sci-fi. Because again, just like fantasy, you have low and high.
Right.
And one thing that I've discovered is when in sci-fi, it's really no different than fantasy a lot of times, because you'll run into things that I'm a soldier or whatever. I understand laser guns, things like that. But I suddenly run into this creature that can turn invisible because it's technology above and beyond what I understand. And that's a very fine line between magic. I mean, it's just technology with another name. So it can be hard, especially for me, because I like playing in fantasy, but I like mixing sci-fi. And I like it when they combine once in a while, too.
Well, depending on how you look at it, science fiction and fantasy are very, very similar, I'd say. Science fiction could be termed as, you know, fantasy, but on the galactic scale.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference in meeting a dragon in a fantasy setting as meeting a dragon in a science fiction setting?
One's
a monster.
Exactly.
What's the difference there? There is none.
There is none. Not to mention, we state that it's grounded in some sort of fact. But if you look at a fantasy world, their magic could be grounded in a science.
Yeah.
It's just different.
Yeah.
But sci-fi works more because, as you stated, Nathan, it's what our world could become. Because we don't have magic, but we have technology. And we could, moving forward, have these fantastic science fiction items.
Like if we went back in time, you know, 500 years, with our current technology level, people would think we're wizards, sorcerers.
And we'd be burned at the stake.
No. But we're just using technology. It's to them, we'd be wizards, you know. Or even to that point, we're you know, back 200 years and they'd look at us and, you know, writers like Jules Verne and Mark Twain would look at us and go, oh, this is, you know, it's a fantastical, this is a science fiction, you know.
Go back farther and we would be gods.
Yes.
And that's one thing with sci-fi. And I don't know, I've never played in a game that touched on this, but it would be interesting, because this will happen, I believe, in real life at some point, when a science fiction or scientifically advanced culture comes to a primitive culture, they will think you are a god, or something similar, whatever their culture says. I haven't played in a game that has touched upon that. I would like to. Because when you land a ship, and there are some little furry bear-type men, no actual creature, but who have fire and spears and things, and you start, you know, cannibals. Anyway, they're going to, especially if you happen to be a shiny, shiny golden man, they're going to worship you as a god.
Yep.
And might be your friends, too. But
Nathan brought up Star Wars, and That's an interesting one to look at, because a lot of people would consider Star Wars a fantasy and not sci-fi. Science fiction. Some people are offended by the sci-fi term. I don't think any of us are any of those people.
I don't know why you'd be offended by it. It's a great term. It should go
back. Because a lot of people try to associate it with the Sci-Fi Channel, and some people absolutely abhor the Sci-Fi Channel because, well...
Hey, I've got to respect any network that brings us Mansquito.
Mansquito! Oh, by the way, in our freezer we have a Mansquito also.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to use the laser on him.
That's fine. I mean, it's Mansquito.
Let me fix the battery before you start using the laser again. I don't want any more radiation.
Don't listen. Just fry it. We can make a big bug light for it.
That's a good idea.
I did find a workshop the other day. We could sort of get in there. But we're digressing again.
Anyway,
like digressing. But science fiction, I guess my definition of science fiction would be that science fiction sort of takes... My idea of science fiction would take everyday situations or everyday problems and put them into a setting or a future where you have the fantastic, but the fantastic is an everyday occurrence, so it doesn't become fantastic anymore. Science fiction is a good thing to have that talks about social issues, it talks about technology, it talks about the impact of cultures and differences. It's a great platform to explore these ideas. I think science fiction definitely is something that I'd say is America's genre. We pretty much invented the thing. And I think science fiction, for me, is just a way to explore those ideas that we have now in a different light.
Wasn't Jules Verne British?
I don't remember, but...
No, he was French. I think he was French. I don't think he was American at all.
He was a robot.
He was... Well, he was a replicant or something.
I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure he was not an American.
Big robot.
I can't remember, unfortunately.
And he is usually...
I thought he was American, but we'll check, and if he's not American, I'll...
Because he's usually typified as a progenitor of...
Not mention
science
anyway.
Fiction.
Now we're going to move on to our next genre... Horror.
Ah, yes. The one I know well.
I'm so scared right now.
Horror is actually a very interesting genre because actually it can be classified as a subgenre of either science fiction or fantasy. There are elements of both usually in horror because the horror genre on a mostly regular basis deals with supernatural, something that is not normal. Case in point, Call of Cthulhu. Big one. Everybody knows that one. But some other small ones that a lot of people might not know about is things like, what was it, Nightbane?
Nightbane.
And an old one that was actually before that was Beyond the Supernatural, which was an old Palladium horror game.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah. I remember that one.
That one was good. Another really good one was Chill.
Chill.
And we're sad to say that Chill has gone the way of the dodo.
As of so many good games.
Yes. As Mayfair was sued by another very large company. And
some company with three distinct letters.
Yeah. And so they dropped their entire role-playing line, which sucks because they had some great games. You know what sci-fi game we forgot to mention? Paranoia,
yeah.
That is sci-fi.
We can get more into that when we actually do our sci-fi podcast, though.
I think the way of defining horror is for the most part, horror, usually what it does is it takes ordinary, everyday people and puts them in extraordinary situations. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily always horrifying, but they're always extraordinary.
Science fiction does it, but science fiction would do it in a more familiar way, where you'd expect it. Horror puts you in that situation where you don't expect
and
it.
And also lot of horror, the supernatural elements are usually evil, or at least evil when it comes to our morality.
Yeah, and horror, it doesn't necessarily need to be evil, it just has to be different.
And but at the same time, when I think of horror, I'm thinking of things like vampires and werewolves,
right,
and the undead, and where magic is not good, can't be used in a good way. God does not give out any magic to his clerics, and wizards have to make horrible sacrifices to dark demons, things that normal people will not ever see. And like Nathan said, you got normal people who are thrown in there with their normal reality, and suddenly it's twisted beyond all belief. And for their morality, it's evil. Vampires, though, if you want to talk about as an evil entity, that is evil. They are feasting upon us.
Yeah, they use us as their cattle. I mean, how much more evil can you get than that?
Same with
a horror setting that I can say definitely differentiates it from pretty much all other settings, as far as I can tell, is the atmosphere that you provide. You have in a science fiction setting, say you're on a starship. It's a starship. Oh, you can go use a holodeck. You know, that's all everyday occurrences. With horror, you're trying to accentuate the weirdness, trying to accentuate something that just isn't right, and play off of that. But there's several different systems for horror and whatnot. My idea, of course, of horror is where you have, unlike science fiction or fantasies, you have these fantastical situations, but with mundane circumstances, or mundane, not really mundane circumstances, but in a mundane setting in and of itself.
Yeah, usually the circumstances are fatal.
Usually, yes, where you have, you know, like, for example, Alien. Probably one of the best horror movies we've ever seen, but it's most certainly got science fiction elements to it, where you have, you know, they're in a big, you know, truck in space, basically, but it's definitely a horror movie.
The original name of that movie was Space Truckers, or something like that? Horrible name. It was a B movie that got upgraded to an A movie with the way it was filmed and directed.
Thanks to Star Wars. Yeah. But do we have anything to add that we can think of to horror?
I think we'll have a lot to add when we actually do our show on
yes.
horror itself and some sort of Halloween type show. And the main thing is you can add horror to basically anything, but by itself it's also a very fun, most of the time, a very fun place to play.
I mean, except for Ravenloft. I've never had any fun with Ravenloft.
No, I've never had any fun with Call of Cthulhu, so therefore...
We'll You've only been in one Call of Cthulhu game, though.
No, more than that.
You've been in one and one? Only one with me.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to the next genre that we're talking about. War!
War is hell, my friends.
War is definitely hell, and it can encompass many different time periods, many different areas, many different styles of the campaign. War is, well, war. What else can we say about it? You know, you either take place as combatants, or the story takes place with the war as a background element. It's definitely a way to jumble things up in any kind of a setting. It definitely makes people look at you know what people do during wartime, as opposed to a peacetime campaign, because people do different things during a war.
Yeah, morality is slightly altered when you're in a situation where you have to worry about survival.
But you're the one who brought up the war setting. What were you thinking about war as a genre?
I brought up that.
Who brought up war?
I brought
you
up
war. You brought up war.
Specifically, what I'm thinking of is historical battles. You see a lot of role-playing done with specific battles and miniature battles from various situations of major battles in World War II and World War I, although more predominantly of World War II. Morality, definitely, is significantly altered in a wartime situation versus what you would normally think was all right and okay in a standard situation. And your decisions and your choices are going to be considerably different.
And also how you build the party differs too in what you want them to do. Do you want them to be part of an elite unit who actually takes place in the battles, which I've always found that's difficult to do at best. Do you want the party just to be playing and running units?
Just come on over.
Which again, it can be difficult. Or do you want them to be special forces, which actually just get sent behind the lines and small unit combat like that?
Or even like resistance behind the lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doesn't have to necessarily be I'm a frontline soldier. It's behind the lines. You could do a like a Flyboys campaign where you're pilots. You know, a great deal of Star Wars in and of itself is a war style campaign where you have pilots running around doing their thing.
There was a really good, small unit combat system in the Birthright system, because there was also unit warfare, and you could have wars between two different kingdoms, but then they broke it down so that you could have your entourage. So you would therefore have your main characters plus your NPCs, and they broke it down so that basically one dice roll was all you needed to figure out, well, I have an entourage of 20 crossbowmen, they do so much damage and they have so much of an armor class, and it was very simple, it was a lot of fun, and also it allows you to adventure with an entourage without causing a lot of problems.
I mean, how many books have you read as far as fantasy settings, really, where war is a major, major element in the campaign? Wartime is definitely a good idea, like running a game during the American Civil War or something like that.
Yeah. I sometimes like the war itself to be in the background, though. But you can run it. It does work. You have to pick what time period. And also, it's kind of neat to have a war going on someplace and then throw players from a completely different area or a different time or whatever into it.
Okay. Nathan, do you have anything you wanted to add about war?
Not really. Pretty much Jeremy just took off and described it all for us.
All right.
In a pretty good way.
Well, next up on our long list is a modern setting or a modern genre where we have today, you know, right outside. There you go. It's a modern day setting. New York, Los Angeles, Shanghai.
This was used predominantly for things like spy games.
Spy games, action games.
Yeah, like feng shui.
Yeah, but I would say definitely a spy game is something to think about when you're doing a modern day campaign, because you are dealing with things like governments and more modern issues. You know, you gotta steal computer schematics, that sort of thing, and you have to take into account much more the genre of a modern day campaign.
And for some people, it's easier to sometimes run a modern, because we know and we understand, if you don't have a lot of background in history, which I always found history, knowing about history always helped in my fantasy world.
Yes.
But if you don't know a lot about that, run a modern game. Most people understand about the basics of guns and money and,
right,
and things like that. So the game itself may be actually same as any other game. It's just how we think about it. And sometimes it's easier for us to just say, well, I live in, you know, the 1990s to 2000s, and I'm going to run a game from that time period. The world is the way it is. The politics are the same. You guys are spies or special forces who are, I don't know, there's so many political things I don't want to get into, but you could use them as an offshoot of for a game.
Right.
And what's neat, you can throw both elements of fantasy and sci-fi just a little bit into it without messing it up, as long as it's mysterious. Not necessarily evil or horrifying, just mysterious.
Right.
Those, like, nanobots for sci-fi, or maybe this witch that may or may not have magical powers. You know, who knows?
Even like Alien Invasion.
Like
that. It's like we have everyday life here, and oh hey, look, a superhero just flew by. You know, a lot of new TV series are exploring that sort of a motif of modern day fiction and the modern day genre. It's definitely a backdrop for something you could use, even if you're going for something more mundane. Obviously, if you're playing a game, you're gonna put something in there that's interesting, such as an espionage switch or some sort of a campaign where, you know, you're something weird's going on and you're developing weird mental powers or something like that. It's definitely a modern setting has elements in it from other genres. You can just really just dump on in there, but you want to definitely, just as with writing, is write what you know.
Mm-hmm.
You run a campaign that's set in your hometown, you know? It's set in where you're living at. It's an interesting challenge to do it that way. You actually do research. You find out some interesting things that are going on, things that you can use about your setting, or use about a modern-day campaign that wouldn't crop up in, say, a history setting or even a sci-fi setting where you have caveats. Really do whatever you want.
And not to mention, it is kind of neat to have your characters walk into your favorite bar, which you actually go to in real life, and your players can go in there, and you know that location. You know about the seating and the bartender and the music. And sometimes it can help with mood. It really can, because you know the place. You know the neighborhood. So it can be very interesting. And depending on where you take your game, it can be a lot of fun. But also it may strike too close to home if you're not careful. So it just depends on what your players really, really want to see. Some players are quite happy with blowing up their hated foe's house. Others aren't. And some players don't want to play in a setting that maybe use real-life politics and things like that. So it has both positives and negatives.
Because they want at least a minor amount of fantasy to their...
Well, there's enough trouble in real life that some... I mean, and you could run a great modern game without any fantasy or sci-fi elements, and it'd be a lot of fun, but I know that there are some players who'd look at it, and if you kept it modern, with the modern politics, modern, all the problems, it could be a lot of fun, but also it may be touching too close to home.
Superheroes.
Yes.
My personal favorite.
And who wouldn't want to be a superhero?
Superheroes.
Wait.
Truth, justice, the American way. Or truth, justice, the Canadian way.
The Canadian way!
Because we are Canadian Crusaders.
We are Canadian Crusaders.
Canadian.
Oh, and, anyway.
Maple syrup.
My definition, superhero settings is, you know, what I've been dealt with. I've been into superheroes so much. I look at superheroes in and of themselves have different sort of subgenres to them, where it depends on the type of the superhero genre you're running. But typically, with the superhero genre, speaking at large, is you have heroes who are fighting the villains. And, you know, they're fighting injustice, they're fighting it in their own way. Now, it could be socially accepted, it could not be socially accepted, but you have your ultimate heroes, whether they're flying around in big red capes or they're running around in black SWAT team uniforms.
And whether they're heroes or vigilantes, they're still, you know. Mm-hmm.
You have superheroes. And I love superheroes. I think superheroes are... superhero genre in general is a great way to, I think, just to have fun. Superheroes allow you to sort of discard those caveats you might have about, oh, hey, there's a bank robbery in progress. So I'll call the police. Well, as a superhero, you can run in and you can save them. I've always liked the superhero genre and the superhero setting.
And I actually have more fun in the non-gritty ones. I like having my superhero run up with his enchanted shovel and smack that bank robber so hard he flies. But I know he's not going to die.
Right.
Because it's a superhero. It's a comic. He's going to land. He's going to be unconscious. Not very realistic.
The best way to
fun.
The best way to describe a superhero genre, the way I run it, is you have what's in the comic book frame. That's what it's important. If it's outside the comic book frame, don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Just outside of the comic book frame, you have a prop midget that gives you what you need. Other than that, if you know you have your nifty little scene transitions, you think of it more in a comic book panel. That's what's going on.
And death is so rare. If it does happen, it's in a major plot point. It's an NPC that
and even in comics. Is death isn't the
exactly.
end. Normally, death
and
isn't the
end. Gritty superhero games are fun, I will say that I personally just have had a lot more fun where I know that I can just let loose and my superhero can save lives and really nobody's going to get truly hurt. The bad guys are going to go to jail.
Right. And that's the exactly type of setting I like running with and playing in.
What is it? It's, you call it four-color?
Four-color superhero setting. Red, white, blue, and apple pie.
Mm-hmm. You know who the good guys are and who the bad guys are. Even if some of the NPCs might say, well...
You might have that mustache-twirling villain.
Exactly. The grittier ones, you're never quite sure. Are we really good guys? Are we bad guys? We just cause $3 billion worth of collateral damage.
Right.
Does that make us good or bad? But in this other one, what did you call it again? The four-colored?
Four-colored superhero.
Yeah, in that one, it's like, you can cause as much damage as you want. Doesn't matter. You're a superhero.
Right.
You're saving people. You're fighting Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
You're fighting evil robots. You're fighting evil aliens. It's great.
Atomic robots.
Mm-hmm.
From Venus.
Put on a cape and fly out there and start swinging.
Exactly. I think a superhero genre is a great exploration in... it's a way you can explore moral issues sometimes. Depends on how serious you want to make it. But ultimately, I think a superhero setting is just a great, fun, escapist and fantasy.
I think it's a great game to start kids at.
Oh, yes.
I really do.
I started in superhero gaming.
I did not, but I believe, I think you should start a child in that type of role-playing setting because it's so open. And yes, they need to learn consequences,
it also delineates, though, it's where you are a good guy,
mm-hmm.
and these guys are bad guys.
Exactly. You don't have to have alignments. It doesn't break down to any of that.
Yeah.
It just is good versus bad. No gray lines at this point. You can add that later on, but sometimes you don't want that.
You have a guy robbing a bank. Well, he's a bad guy. I'll stop him. You can get into the more serious stuff. Well, a guy robbing a bank. Well, why is he robbing a bank? Oh, he's robbing a bank so he can pay for his son's operation.
And just the ones that I like to play, it's just you stop that supervillain, or that villain. He doesn't have to be a supervillain. Just that villain. He goes to jail, and justice will figure it out.
You hand him off to the police, mm-hmm. say, "Here, officer, I think this man has something to confess."
Like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like some of the... I don't want to say early Batmans, but the Batmans where he basically just left them, or he'd take them to, prison or whatever.
Tie them up and drop them off on the police steps, yes.
Now I got to say, though, Batman and his grittiness, special place in my heart, love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's its own special place.
Well, Batman is a discussion in and of himself.
Yeah.
Batman doesn't kill, so.
He does not kill, that's
he still correct. He still ties people up, leaves them for God.
I almost think Superman is more of the kind of what we're talking about.
Right.
That type of hero who he knows he is right.
Superman
and
is the
good.
Epitome of the red, white, blue, and apple pie.
Captain America is even better.
Yes. You explore these, depending on the superhero genre you want, you can go for the, good versus bad, or you could do shades of gray. It all depends on where you're going with it. I personally like the four-color superhero settings. And the superheroes, where the superheroes are the heroes, and the supervillains are the villains. It's very delineated. You have your fist-shaking, megalomaniacal villains that are bent on world domination,
And remember, folks, we will be breaking these down into more details.
Yes, we are planning on doing single shows, doing a series of shows on these, so definitely stay tuned on that.
We're going to pause here for station identification. We'll be right back after this.
Okay, you people sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning, and if we're not back by dawn, call the president.
In March 2006, the Seven Son Thriller Trilogy began. Seven human clones were ripped away from their normal lives to stop a conspiracy created by their ruthless progenitor, a man codenamed John Alpha. Now, a new adventure awaits John, Father Thomas, Kilroy 2.0, and the other beta clones. The world is hours away from a nuclear attack. The Vice President is an agent of evil, and John Alpha lives on and possesses technology that can make anyone, anywhere, a puppet of his wrath. To prevent the next phase of Alpha's scheme, John and the others must face the horrors of betrayal, race cross-country to track their nemesis, and discover that the bloodshed they've witnessed is merely a prelude to the world-rending destruction to come. Seventh Son, Book 2, Deceit, is the new novel in the hit patio book series by J.C. Hutchins. Join more than 11,000 listeners who currently tune in each week to hear new chapters and cliffhangers, as well as special appearances by best-selling authors Robert J. Sawyer, Mike Resnick, Tracy Hickman, Jeff Loeb, Mark Waid, and chart-topping podcasters Keith and the Girl, Scott Sigler, Mer Lafferty, the crew from The Signal, and exclusive readings by film director and editor Patrick Lussier and Nathan Fillion, star of Firefly and Serenity. Become a part of the Seventh Son experience. Find Seventh Son Book 2 Deceit and Book 1 Descent at jchutchins.net and at patiobooks.com.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
And we're back. And today we are doing, in our three-parter section, we've got characters going to be handled again by Jeremy, the resident NPC master. The rant will be done by myself. I'll be doing a rant on metagaming. And the review will be handled by Nathan, who will be doing a review of Mutants and Masterminds. So let's go ahead and kick it off with the We've Got Character.
We've Got Character.
Well, we ended with superheroes, and that reminded me of an NPC that I threw in my last superhero game, which caused mass chaos and mass confusion.
And ended up having a much bigger part than you intended.
Yes, he did. I mostly put him in there for comic relief, but he turned out to be pretty important, and if we ever get to go back to that game, I'm hoping will expand
on... We definitely have to go back to the game. We have to save Robin's character.
That's true. But his name is Wilbur Mysterious, and this poor gentleman, he's a, I would say, geek. He's into video games. He's into role-playing. He also has a tendency to be very confused, as well as he shows up everywhere. And when I say everywhere, I mean everywhere. You'll get into a taxi, and the taxi driver is Wilbur Mysterious. You'll be driving down the road, and the guy selling hot dogs is Wilbur Mysterious.
Go into the bank.
Bank teller. It's Wilbur Mysterious. Your supervisor at work is Wilbur Mysterious. When you talk to him, though, he's not aware of multiple Wilbur Mysteriouses, and
they never run into each other,
and they also have a tendency to die horribly. either being hit by cars, being kidnapped,
radiation poisoning.
And the poor individual may turn out to be the most powerful mutant on the face of existence. But he doesn't know this. He doesn't understand it. He's confused. His friends show up and say, "I just saw you at the movie theater. Well, I've been here all day. You must be mistaken." No, I talked to you face to face. "No, I've been eating your food all day and playing your video games." Or, "The taxi, I just got it. Wilbur? You're my supervisor at work. How are you driving this? What? I don't know what you're talking about." So he's just one of those mysterious yet very confused characters that has a tendency to get all the players together. Whether the players' characters know each other or not, they all know Wilbur Mysterious. And it was kind of neat to have Wilbur be horribly killed, and the reaction on people's faces is, "Oh, poor Wilbur, you know, he's dead." And then they find out he's hanging out in his apartment.
Yep.
And then the players start wanting to figure out what's going on. So throw in an NPC like that. Give him some interesting characteristics and some interesting powers. You don't even have to go with the rule book. I didn't. I just gave him some powers that... off the top of my head, and see what happens to him. See where he can go. So.
The rant.
Well, today I'm going to do a nice little rant on metagaming. So last time we touched on Munchkin gaming, or you know, Nathan's idea of Munchkin gaming. Today we're going to touch upon my peeve with metagamers.
Now, what is metagaming?
Metagaming is using out-of-character knowledge in-game. Say, for example, you have a D&D character who's walking along. He's first level, and he comes across a Baylor demon.
Baylor.
Now, normally, you know, most players would, you know, or most people would, ooh, demon, run away in abstract terror. No, the metagamer looks at it, oh, it's a Baylor demon. I know a Baylor demon is vulnerable to this, this, and this, so I'm going to do this. Metagamers tend to not think logically about things in character. They think of, they never really act they never act in a characterized fashion, they act in a player fashion. They usually take their out-of-game knowledge and mess with it and give people instructions on what you guys need to do, or people who have read certain modules before, it's like, oh, well, we need to go into this room because this is where the thing is. But the character wouldn't know that. And no matter how much you sit there and you berate said players, metagamers, about not doing this, they keep doing it anyway. I dislike metagamers, obviously, and I really, you know, wish metagamers would, get a life and not read every single book and let us game masters be able to actually use modules or use adventures out of Dungeon Magazine or use adventures out of any other kind of magazine and not, you know, sit there and go, well, I can't wait till we get to this portion of the game so I could do this. I hate metagamers. A lot.
You know my way of fixing metagamers. Oh, we're fighting a troll. Did I say it was a troll? I said it was troll-like. Never said it was a troll.
Metagamers have the habit of sucking the mysticism out of anything. It'd be like playing in a Star Wars game and saying, okay, well, here's this force witch who's doing this very weird stuff, and then one of the players says, well, I wonder what her midichlorian count is.
I would smack that person.
Yeah.
Sorry to break into your rant, but I just have to... I would physically stand up and smack that person.
Yes, but that's
the
style.
Smack metagamers
that's sort of the idea of metagaming that gets me. I really hate that using out-of-character information in-game. It's ridiculous, there's no excuse for it, and you shouldn't do it.
And don't even get me started on midichlorians.
Yeah, midichlorians or midichlorians?
Whatever.
Midichlorians.
Yeah, we won't even discuss that. George Lucas needs to be put in an insane asylum.
The review.
Okay, short rant, I know, but now we're moving on to the review of Mutants and Masterminds.
Yes. Actually, I'm going to be reviewing Mutants and Masterminds 2nd Edition. For those of you out there who have played Mutants and Masterminds, more than likely all of you by now have probably picked up 2nd Edition. 2nd Edition is vastly improved. Vastly improved. Character creation is a breeze compared to 1st edition. I was so confused the first time I tried to make a character in Mutants and Masterminds. It was not so in 2nd Ed. As you also know, the book is actually more well laid out this time than it was in the first revision.
Very beautiful, too.
The what?
Very beautiful.
Gorgeous book.
Yeah, the artwork is incredible.
It's the first, one of the first role, like, generic superhero games that has actually gotten comic book artists to do the pictures and original pictures for their books.
Yeah, so you have their specific characters that they created specifically for the setting, artwork from those from various well-known comic artists. The books are laid out great. They did the same thing like they did with 3.5 with the off coloring on the charts so that you can quickly browse the charts for when you need to get information. Makes it so much easier to deal with.
Put out by Green Ronin?
Green Ronin. Yes, Green Ronin. It's about 315 pages.
Something like that.
It's a nice, big, hefty book. It's $45?
It's a $40 book.
$40. $39.95.
Worth every penny.
Worth every red cent. And buy it at your local game store. Don't buy it online or I'll beat you with a stick.
You've got to support your local game stores or they won't be there anymore for us. And that will be a sad day indeed. But
uses a D20. It's a D20 system
D20
game.
System,
it's not a D20 game, but it's an open game license.
Is it open game license? No, I wasn't sure on that one. But yes, it does use a D20. The one thing I really like is that the combat system is incredibly streamlined. There is no, okay, I have an armor class of 35, roll, I have plus 27 to hit. No, it's okay. I have a plus 15 to hit. I have to beat this specific score. Okay, I beat it. Now they're gonna resist for to the damage. Okay, so they roll their d20 and they add this to that. Voila. Okay, right. They resist this much damage.
It uses a toughness save system. There are no hit points. They've released a number of books for it now. There's the Ultimate Power. There's their Freedom City setting, which is fantastic.
There's the Golden Age.
The Golden Age source book. Any number of books
Locked
available
out.
With their
yeah.
at Green Ronin's website. Or got by your local game store. They should have plenty of them.
And if they don't actually have it in stock, more than likely they'll be able to get it to you within 3 days. That seems to be the standard around here. I don't know what it is where you guys are at, but if you order something and it is available and in stock, they can get it and have it shipped to you within 3 days.
Let me ask you, what did you like about Mutes and Masterminds?
Well, first of all, the system, they changed a lot of the powers around to make them much more usable.
Right.
They expanded on the power base immensely from the first book as well. There's probably 30 new powers that weren't in the first book, from taking apart certain power bases and stuff in the first book and changing them into something
plus
that works.
They've expanded on in the Ultimate Power book.
I haven't had a chance to look at the Ultimate Power
book. There are more powers available now.
And we will review that book later.
Had very few limits on it, too.
Limits are different. They made the powers actually the way the powers progress as you level up your powers is much more intuitive now, and versus the first system where you can go from like a level 5 to a level 7 and suddenly you're uber strong going just two levels. Now it's more progressive. It's like from level 5 to level 7.
My advice when going into Mutes and Masterminds is not to get it mixed up with it's D&D with superpowers, because it's not. Don't think of it as, I'm starting off as power level 10, well, I'm a 10th level character. Well, no. It's a power level 10 campaign. That's kind of hard to delineate between, but you don't actually say, well, I'm a level 10 character, or I'm a level 3 character, whatever. It's the power level of the campaign determines
the
strength and the maximums for what powers you can take.
Yes. The system is a breeze, like I said. Character creation is simple. I highly recommend it to anybody who loves superheroes in any way, shape, or form. The book is pretty much available worldwide now.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of different languages. It's incredibly popular. And continuing to support the book will continue to support Green Ronin. Continued support of Green Ronin means we'll get more material just like it.
Exactly.
So I heartily recommend it. It gets a solid thumbs up from me, and I recommend you go down to your local game store and pick up a copy. You can't go wrong with a superhero game anyways.
No. And as I've mentioned earlier in the podcast, is I cut my teeth on superhero games, and I can say I've gone through many superhero games till I found Mutants and Masterminds, and it is the superhero game I use exclusively. I love the system. It works so wonderfully.
We'll have to discuss Silver Age Sentinels at some point, though.
Yes, so Silver Age Sentinels was the best until Mutants and Masterminds came out. And Mutants and Masterminds just blew everything out of the water.
And the nice thing about Mutants and Masterminds is you could also run a fantasy game with it, it wouldn't be that
well,
much of a difference.
They've adapted it to the True 20 campaign setting, which uses a lot of elements from Mutants and Masterminds, and they actually use it as a generic setting. Another thing by Green Ronin Publishing, visit their websites, www.greenronin.com. We'll put that in our notes. And right now I think we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back for Random Encounters, and that's about it then.
Okay, so I'll see you later, huh? I'll give you a call.
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I never look at the big picture because I can't stand watching horror movies.
I try to avoid sitting here thinking of what to say next. I like to make it off the cuff, spontaneous. It doesn't work.
All I want now, and all I ever really wanted ever since I was a little kid, is total omnipotence. Is that too much to ask?
I could even get out on a limb of wild speculation. I know, pretty odd thing to do for this podcast. I could fit your brain in a hollow pea, I swear. That's just two clear cuts, two black and white. It's all point of view, don't you understand? It's point of view.
Oh, man, every other podcast is better than mine!
That's enough. Whining time is over.
No doubt, if you were paying attention, you detected a minor tinge of paranoia.
But this is supposed to be fun. I'm supposed to be doing this for fun. And if it means exhibiting false enthusiasm, I'm not above that. So I'm just going to apologize now and let's move on. So what specifically are you worried about, Adam? You would probably want to grab me around the neck with your arm and pull my head off. Did that make any sense?
Did you see the memo about this?
Well, we're back, and as you can tell, the audio's a bit different on this, because we record this later after we have recorded these various shows. We're back for random encounters, obviously. We only have one feedback really to look at today. Today we've got a feedback from Anim5. Anim5 is the host of the International Detective Dragons from Outer Space podcast. We'll put a link to that in our show notes. And just wanted to read his really nice email to us. Said, just listen to your premiere episode, yet another fun gaming podcast add to my podcatcher list. Your promo will be played with gusto in International Detective Dragons from Outer Space number 27 and in many shows after. Now, we probably heard one of his promos already. We'll be trying to play his promos as much as we can. Go over there, check out his show. We really do appreciate the kind words from him. He does a great show. Just wanted to put the word out to people that if we're doing something you guys like, let us know. If we're doing something you don't like, let us know. We really want to do a show where that you want to listen to. So let us know what you like. Let us know what you want to hear. And we're going to be doing our best to make shows that that are at least entertaining and at least fun to listen to. Jeremy here has a quick message, so I'm just going to leave it to him. And that's going to about do it for the show.
We are in this giant underground facility. It's all very high-tech and sci-fi-ish.
We've got Rosie the robot in the back. She's doing some cleaning for us.
I leave all the high-tech stuff to Nathan and Ethan. I, though, have gone down the hall and found this nice little laboratory. There's a wizard's hat and a wand, some potions. It tastes like Pepsi. Not really sure if it is Pepsi, though. But anyway, I want to build a plane traveling device. And therefore, we can do our podcasts on different planes of existence. I would like to have your feedback on where we can go.
Like snakes on a plane of existence? Or?
Sure. Anyway, one, I need ideas on how to build this machine.
Delta Airlines? TWA?
Those type of planes?
Right. Here, drink these potions.
Ooh, Pepsi.
Pepsi. Anyway, as I'm giving this nice drink to my friend, what I would like from you all is ideas on how we can build this magical plane-shifting device and where we can visit. Maybe we can have our podcast from such places as, I don't know, the elemental plane of fire. Or
it's getting
air.
On here.
Or any place else. So please, send in your ideas. Anything would be helpful.
Thanks. Plane of positive energy.
You can visit us on the web at www.canadiancrusaders.com or alternately at canadiancrusaders.fistfulofcomics.com. You can visit our website there, leave us an audio. You can call our voicemail line at 206-984-4122. Leave a message on the Frapper map. You can drop us an email at thousandmonkeysproductions@gmail.com. And you could also just visit the forums on Fistful of Comics. We have our own little section there.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
Gamers Haven is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Sharealike 2.5 license, and is hosted by the fine folks at www.fistfulofcomics.com, and is a Thousand Monkeys production. Now there's just one rule, and it's go eye for an eye. And if you swallow the drug,
donut.
Please feel free to send us any feedback on your favorite donuts also.
Because we're willing to try anything when it comes to donuts, because donuts are tasty.
Advertisements.
Everybody loves donuts. 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 Everybody loves donuts. It's apt for your teeth.
Oh, poor teeth.
Well, I don't listen to my teeth. They're stupid.
It'll not give you any harm. It'll not give you any harm. It'll not give you any harm. And we all fall
a different chicken song. Show me the way to go home.
Where's the shark?
I'm tired and I wanna go to bed.
Ah! We're gonna need a bigger boat.
Drink about an hour ago. And it went right to my...
We had a little interruption there with a oh-so-wonderful forgetful pizza delivery guy. We fed him to the alien and the Mansquito.
Yeah, the Mansquito was great. Something like...
That thing sucks so
much. Bad.
It's just amazing.
It's like a Hoover.
I know. Only the best.
It's from Hoover. It sucks.
But where were we? Let's see. Horror.
Yes, horror. And living fire creatures.
Living fire creatures. And hounds of Tyndalos.
And hellhounds who are defending our property.
Hounds of Tyndalos, I don't think, would be found in a fantasy. Well, maybe, but...
They could be.
Yeah.
Typically.
Yeah. Can we say Krispy Kreme on the recording?
Yeah.
Krispy Kreme.
Yep.
Love's in here. Everywhere I look around, love is in the air.
Back
every
to
sight, every sound.
Back to superhero games.
Yes.
You know a genre we forgot on this list, though, which is its own genre? Pirates.
Pirates.
Yeah, everything's better.
Or SWAT. Pirates / swashbuckler.
And everything's better with pirates.
Everything is better with pirates. And if you throw ninjas in there, then dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Yeah, can't get much better than that.
What have you been using it for?
The battery won't recharge. Don't use it anymore. We gotta fix the battery.
I've been like cooking like hot dogs and stuff with it.
Oh man, maybe you know that thing's slightly radioactive.
Well, you know those hot dogs we ate last night.
What were they?
Those were good.
Yeah, they were really good. We'll leave it at that.
Anyway, yeah, make your roll to eat.
I fumbled my hamburger. Man. Yes! I get to continue breathing! Here, let me borrow your die, because my die sucks. Oh, I get to continue breathing, too. You get to breathe better than I do.
Oh, I got a 7. I failed.
You're asphyxiate.
Well, as soon as Ethan dies, I guess we'll be continuing with just the two of us. Though we might replace him with my dog. We should reincarnate him or something.
I'll go get the wand of reincarnation.
Maybe he'll come back as a monkey.
You gonna put me at work at one of the typewriters?
Yeah. Yes.
You guys know I can't write. You don't want me on a typewriter.
Monkeys can't write either.
Neither the rest of them. It's taking them, you know, an infinite amount of time to write the complete works of Shakespeare as it is.
Mansquito, all the way.
All I have to say is the only thing that I've watched on Sci-Fi Channel lately has been Eureka and the new Doctor Who series, which is actually kind of good.
I would recommend Doctor Who.
I haven't watched Doctor
definitely
Who yet.
Definitely a good sci-fi.
It's definitely something I want to check out. I watch Battlestar Galactica.
Vampires aren't even evil.
But
football players are.
Podcast. Everyone loves a podcast. Podcast. Everyone loves a podcast.
Except for Jeremy.